Konya, and 33 in Gorham. This is NHPR News.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. Here's an equation that even our state's best mathematical minds haven't been able to solve. What's the formula for improving New Hampshire math students' scores, all while respecting local budgets and local control? For years, school districts have searched for that holy grail of math curriculum that will best prepare kids for the jobs of the 21st century. And up until recently, many districts were on board with a program called Everyday Math, touted for its emphasis on making math meaningful and relevant to students' regular lives. But now that approach is being criticized in some corners as a mile wide and an inch deep. And change is coming as New Hampshire adopts a national set of standards called the Common Core, which is reportedly tougher than current standards and was designed by state education leaders nationwide, not the federal government. But whether the Common Core turns out to be that elusive X factor spurring Granite State kids toward higher math achievement remains to be seen. What is the constant? Change in math education is underway. Today in The Exchange, solving the math problem. Let's hear from you. If you're an employer or an educator, what have you noticed in terms of the math abilities of high school and college graduates? If you're a parent, what do you make of the way math is taught these days and what might make it better? Give us a call. Tell us what you think. The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org, or post a comment on our Facebook page or on the Exchange page at nhpr.org. We have three guests for the hour with us in studio, Paul Leather, New Hampshire Deputy Commissioner of Education. And Paul, welcome back. Good to see you.
Thank you, Laura.
Also with us, Greg Superci, president of the New Hampshire Teachers of Mathematics. He teaches high school math in Lisbon and also math education courses at Plymouth State University. And Greg, good to have you too. Thanks for your time.
Thanks for having me. Wonderful to be here.
Also with us, Lincoln Robertson, a mathematics professor at White Mountains Community College. His students include future mathematics teachers. Lincoln has also taught math at the high school and middle school levels. And Lincoln Robertson, great to have you too. Thanks for being with us.
Oh, thanks a lot, Laura.
Well, and Paul, I'll start with you. So looking at the math scores for New Hampshire, for the SAT and the ACT, these are the two college preparatory tests that kids take, New Hampshire students rank just a little bit above average. How do you interpret that, Paul? Is that what you'd expect, or would you expect more, given that we're one of the nation's healthiest and wealthiest states?
Laura, I think that New Hampshire can do better in math and should be doing better in math. I think when students are tested when they come into school and after they've been there for a little while and in grade three, they're really at top in the nation, both when you look at our NECAP scores and when you look at the national NAEP scores. But as they progress through the years, they drop off in proficiency to about 36% by the time they're completing the 11th grade.
36% are proficient.
Are proficient.
Wow, that's not very good, Paul.
Right. So I think we believe that things could be better. And Greg Superci and I and a number of folks responded to a call from the State Board of Education in 2011 and created a task force to study mathematics instruction and came up with a number of recommendations so that we could, in fact, improve mathematics performance in New Hampshire.
Well, we'll definitely get on those this hour. But Greg, to you then. So that suggests to me, and correct me if I'm wrong, that at the elementary level, we're doing things pretty well, but once we get to the middle school and high school levels, we need to do something different. Is that correct?
Yeah, I think that's what the results show. The elementary has been a little bit more progressive than the middle and high school has. It's moving its way up through. And there are just so many factors when students start to get older and they start to mature and start to understand things concerning like that, you know, everybody's abilities are different. Everybody's interests are different. So there are those social and personal and individual factors that contribute as we move on.
Now, what do you mean by that, Greg? Social and personal factors that might impede progress in math?
Well, you know, when you're younger, you don't really realize that. You know, we tend to live in this sort of snow globe where we say we all can do well, and we all have that same love. And I'm not saying we all can't do well. I'm just saying that we believe that to the nth degree, that we all can just be the best, and that nobody is really any better than anybody else. And as we move up through, you start to realize that, wow, she's really good at this, and he's really good at that, and I'm good at this thing. And then socially, we begin to mature. Our parents, you know, let us out on that leash a little further, and we start making our own choices.
I guess what I'm trying to get at, though, Greg, and I hear you about the way people, you know, label themselves and think of themselves vis-a-vis the rest of the world. But why math? I mean, wouldn't that apply to other disciplines as well? Or is math unique in that way?
No, I think it does. I think it does. I think similar results are found in other areas as well.
Yeah. Lincoln, what do you see as a professor at a community college? How would you rank the math abilities of most of your students?
Well, several of my students come in with very high math abilities, and then we get students who come in who haven't taken a math course in 2.5 years. So their math ability, I'm not sure that's the right word, but their math capability is there. They passed their math classes in high school. They graduated high school. But because they got them out of the way during their freshman and sophomore year, they come in and it's been, you know, 2.5 years. Since they've taken a math class, and they just don't remember it. And that's pretty reasonable, actually. You know, how many things did you learn 2.5 years ago that you haven't used that you still know today?
Right. So maybe ability isn't the right word, Lincoln. It's understanding?
Well, it's
How well do you think they get it once you explain it to them, even if they have forgotten a little bit?
Most of them pick it back up fairly quickly once they get back into the mode of being in a math classroom. There's another half to it, another piece to it, though, which if you think about it, if you were 19 or 20 years old and walked into a building and said, I can't read, everybody would rush up to you and say, there's a problem, we need to fix it. If you are 20 years old and walk in and say, I can't do math, everybody else says, oh, geez, I hate math, too. So some of it is attitude. We tell our students that it's okay not to like math. And couple that with 2.5 years of not doing any math, and it's very hard. My students write a paper. Every class I teach, there's a paper involved, and I see a lot of students saying, you know, I just don't like math and don't want to do it, and I'm doing it because I have to for my degree, not because I choose to. So you have that emotional thing to get over with them before they can allow themselves to learn the math. A lot of what I do.
Yeah, well, what's going on with that, Lincoln? I mean, I'm so struck by your analogy. No one would walk into a community college on day one and say, I'm illiterate, I can't read. But a lot of people would walk in and say, I hate math, I can't do it.
I mean, that's the perfect description of what I see every day. You know, and the solution to it is probably more time in a math classroom, in math classrooms that are focused on things the students are interested in.
Well, and this gets into one of the criticisms of the everyday math program, Paul Ether, and we'll probably talk about that a little bit later, but that's the criticism. Everyday math, try to make math meaningful and relevant. And, you know, my kids used everyday math, and they try and make it relevant to their daily lives, whether you're shopping with mom or dad or, you know, building something out of blocks. And yet everyday math, despite that emphasis, has been criticized as a mile wide and an inch deep. So it seems like we can't figure this thing out. What's right?
Well, there are criticisms of everyday math, and there are certainly a number of proponents of everyday math. I think the research shows that those schools that have implemented everyday math with what they call fidelity, in other words, that they're doing it the right way and as recommended, that we see a better performance by students over time. At the same time, there's criticisms around everyday math, around does it focus enough on basic foundational skills? Does it teach the basic algorithms of arithmetical and mathematical reasoning and skill? And does it dwell enough on those skills so that students really know them and understand them and can use them as a foundation as they go forward? So there's the pros and cons of everyday math. I think actually there's been too much attention to that particular curriculum issue and perhaps not enough attention to the fact that teachers, particularly in elementary and middle school, often don't have a very deep background in mathematics, and so they rely on the curriculum as part of their instruction. And we need to do a better job providing both pre-service in mathematical skills as well as professional development in math as teachers start to practice and are working in the classroom.
Although you did say earlier that the elementary level math scores look pretty good for New Hampshire, so maybe the elementary teachers are doing something right.
That's true, but I think, what the research starts to show is that students can get the answer right using mathematical skills that they had learned earlier on, and that works for a certain bit of time.
I see.
The classic example is you can do some multiplication by adding. But if you don't really learn multiplication, then you're going to have trouble with fractions and on beyond. And so that's why sometimes there's a delayed effect.
Let me also invite our listeners to join us. And again, the number here in the exchange is 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. Join us. We're talking about how math is taught today in New Hampshire, how well our students understand math, and how this might be improved. Our number here in the exchange is 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. You know, Lincoln, picking up on something Paul said about everyday math, there does seem to be a lot of finger-pointing when it comes to improving math. Some people blame everyday math. Sometimes the colleges blame the high schools. The high schools blame the lower grades. Blame is also given to the way our teachers are taught. What do you think about all this, Lincoln?
Well, yeah, I find it interesting that you said that the high schools blame it on the middle schools. I started in grad school teaching at UMass Amherst and then worked my way to the high school level and then the middle school level, and we always blamed the teachers who came before us. So that is kind of the way we look at it, and I've seen, you know, when I see at the elementary level, sometimes we blame the parents. But I think what it really is and you mentioned it in your intro to the program, we're looking for a holy grail. And everyday math or new math, or you go back to any one of these sort of fads we've been through, has always been presented as a holy grail. When what I think really it needs is we need to focus on each individual student. Some students are going to thrive under everyday math. Some students are going to hate it. And that's true of any particular curriculum choice you make, I think, at the elementary level. You know, you're buying a series of books.
All right.
So
we're going
to
talk after a short...
to differentiate.
Yeah, and we'll talk a lot more about that after a short break. And we'll also take your calls, 1-800-892-6477. Stay with us.
Good morning, it's 9:19, and more on American students' problems with math on the exchange on NHPR. And at 10, it's the Diane Rehm Show. New Hampshire weather, winter weather advisory in effect for central and northern New Hampshire for today. Rain heavy at times across southern New Hampshire. North of the Plymouth area, it'll be freezing rain and snow with accumulations of 1 to 3 inches possible. Highs around 35 in northern New Hampshire, 40 to 45 degrees for southern parts of the state. Support for NHPR comes from you, our members, and support also comes to us from Heritage Plumbing, Heating, Cooling for any plumbing, heating, cooling, or drain problem, offering annual tune-ups and efficient heating systems online at justcallheritage.com. And from Goodwill Industries of Northern New England, announcing its new store on Route 1 in Portsmouth will open on December 20th online at goodwillnne.org. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, trying to improve math education, math understanding here in the Granite State, we invite you to join us at 1-800-892-6477. If you're an employer or an educator, what's your take on how well Granite State young people understand basic math concepts? How would you rate their abilities? And if you're a parent, what do you make of the way math is taught these days? What do you think might make it better? Our number for you to join us is 1-800-892-6477. You can email us at exchange@nhpr.org or post a comment on our Facebook page or on the Exchange page at nhpr.org. And we go now to Tony Falcone. He's a mathematician who has some concerns about the way math has been taught in his town of Hollis. And Tony Falcone, good to have you. Thanks for your time.
Oh, well, thanks for having me.
Well, you've been pretty vocal about your skepticism with everyday math. We touched on this curriculum just a minute ago. What's wrong with everyday math, Tony?
Well, I think there are a couple of things. I think the first thing is that it doesn't have a good structure to it in the sense that math, by its very nature, is kind of cumulative, builds up on concepts. And I think everyday math is ill-conceived in that they have this spiraling idea where they introduce a topic and then they kind of go on to another topic. And I don't think it allows the students to kind of be able to see that there's this underlying structure or framework that kind of undergirds the whole process. So I think that's one part of it that I think wasn't really thought out very well in terms of trying to make sure that the students get the most out of mathematics.
You know,
this basic understanding.
The criticism, Tony, that I have read about everyday math is that it's a mile wide and an inch deep. Do you agree with that? Superficial? Too superficial?
Yeah, I mean, I think as a summary statement, I think I would agree with that.
Well, how would you change it if you were in charge, Tony, without getting too mathematical on us?
Well, I mean, that's a difficult question. I mean, it's really hard to take this. I mean, I think where it starts with, and I don't want to go too far off topic, but where it starts with is you have to ask yourself, what are we trying to accomplish with math education? You know, we obviously want to have, there's all this talk about STEM, you know, we want better scientists,
right,
and engineers and even mathematicians. But there's also this notion of how much mathematics does the average person need to know to be considered, you know, an intelligent member of our technological society? I think that these are two perhaps different goals that need to be addressed. But I think that the first thing that needs to be done is to go through and decide what do we think are the basic core ideas that every, again, educated person in our society should have, and then make sure that these are being touched on and touched on deeply, and not worry so much about these more esoteric things that seem to be, you know, sometimes they're in vogue and then they go out of vogue and things like that.
Yeah, and that's a really interesting point. And Lincoln Robertson brought that up just before the break, that, you know, we're always searching for the holy grail here. You know, is it this curriculum? Is it this approach? Is it this method? And, you know, every couple months somebody comes out and says, no, my method is the way to catapult all our students into mathematical success. What do we do to get off of that train, Tony? Do we even need to get off of it, or should we keep searching?
Well, I think we absolutely need to get off of it for the obvious reasons, right? I mean, you just can't, if you keep skipping around, you're never going to find, I think, the thing that you need to do. I think, and I hate to say this because it's going to date me tremendously, but I mean, if I remember, you know, my own education, we were grounded in fundamentals. Although I was on the tail end of what they called like the new math, you know, we did set theory and things like that.
Uh-huh.
But we also did a lot of computation, a lot of manipulation. We had bundles of straws, you know, single straws and tens, and then tens to hundreds, and so on. And that's how I internalized these mathematical concepts. And I think that we are afraid to do that to a certain extent now because people think, oh, well, we want to stifle kids' creativity. We don't want to force them to think a certain way. But what you really want to do is give people the tools so that they can be creative. And I don't think that we're doing that right now.
Well, Tony, thanks a lot for being with us. Lots to chew on, huh?
Yeah, there's a lot to think about.
Thanks a lot, Tony.
Okay, sure. My pleasure.
That's Tony Falcone. He's a mathematician who has expressed his concerns about the way math has been taught in his hometown of Hollis. What are your concerns or kudos for the way math is taught here in New Hampshire? It's not all bad, as we've been hearing. Our phone number on the exchange is 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. And Greg Superci, again, you're president of the New Hampshire Teachers of Mathematics. What do you think about this idea of, you know, the fads, and we're always looking for the latest thing that's going to solve all our problems, when, as Lincoln said, we really just need to focus on every single kid and helping him or her be successful?
Well, that's just it. I mean, we as a nation, we're always trying to do better. I mean, that's who we are. That's what we're built upon, is always trying to be bigger and better and accomplishing more. And so, absolutely, you can't just set off on this quest to find the Holy Grail. You have to think about the things that have worked in the past and connect to that the latest and current research about how things are done.
Well, and Paul, a quick question to you, and maybe we'll go towards this more this later. One of the elephants in the room that I see is, no matter which curriculum you're using, Common Core, Everyday Math, JUMP, I mean, there's so many acronyms out there. If class sizes were a lot smaller, teachers could probably use whatever curriculum. I mean, not whatever, but it probably would matter less what curriculum teachers were following, because they would have more time to help each individual student, as Lincoln said. Is class size the elephant in the room in this math problem?
I hesitate to go there. Certainly, when you have smaller classes, it is easier to focus on the needs of each individual student. At the same time, a cost of education is certainly a factor in every town in New Hampshire and for the state. And so the day in which we're going to see dramatically more resources go into education that would allow us to reduce class sizes, I think that's not likely to happen. So I think what we really need to focus on is finding the best curriculum and instruction and assessment methods that will really allow teachers and arm teachers to be the best that they can be for the students that they do have in front of them.
All right, let's take some calls. We've got lots and lots of people who want to jump in on this topic. And Linda is up first, calling from Springvale, Maine. Hi, Linda. You're on the Exchange. Go ahead.
Hi. I'm actually a homeschooling parent, but I've also hosted kids from other countries, international students that have lived with us. And as a homeschooling parent, I'm involved with my kids' education. That's all. It's just me. But I think that the biggest thing that's lost is what your mathematician, the guy that you had on just a few minutes ago, talked about briefly, and that's that the fundamental skills aren't being really, the kids aren't being entrenched with them. So they go, they do fine for second and third grade, because it's pretty easy to calculate, add, subtract, and do very simple division without having memorizing all those number facts. But then they hit fourth grade and they have to do long division, and they have to do fractions, and they have to do decimals, and all of those number facts have to be deeply embedded in them. And I don't see how a teacher can give the kids the amount of time they need to have to memorize those facts. When I was a kid, we had to memorize those facts at home. So, and our parents were involved in making sure we had those facts down pat.
You just have to memorize those times tables then, Linda. Absolutely.
I know it sounds silly, but I had a high school niece and nephew who had a tutor who was paid $50 an hour and to bring their math up, and then told my brother, basically what I spent a lot of time doing was teaching them their math facts.
Wow.
At high school. We did math. Memorizing seems to be the most boring things. Nobody wants to talk about it. But the thing is little kids are geared toward it. If they're rewarded, they get a kick out of it. It can be a fun thing, and it makes them very prepared for the more abstract things that if they have that in their head.
Okay, Linda, thanks a lot for calling in. What do you think about this call, Greg?
That's a great call. Coming back to some of the things that Tony said and that the caller just said, we do have to be funded in ground and fundamentals. We absolutely do. A lot of practice in everyday math, a lot of practice and practice in fundamentals comes through the activities that are in there. Some people call them games, and that turns some people off because they're called a game. But they really are practice, and students are using those skills, and they do have to know that. She also talked about how where did this used to happen? It happened in the homes. That's where so many of us learned so much. It might have been introduced. It may have been taught to us at the school. But what happened when we got home? Mom, Dad, Graham, Gramps, somebody sat down with you with those flashcards. Or whatever worked. It might have been playing cribbage. It might have been playing dominoes. Those are the kinds of things that really gave us those fundamentals. And on the flip side of that, though, I mean, really, how good was our education 20 years ago or 30 years ago? I mean, we talked earlier about getting off the train and getting, and just going back to fundamentals. Well, on the other hand, how were we doing 20 years ago in math education in our country compared to the rest of the world? And how are we doing now? We continue to improve. So going back to old things that didn't work the first time aren't going to help us.
So if you agree with Linda, Gregg, again, you're president of the New Hampshire Teachers of Mathematics. What are you folks doing about it?
Well, the standards-based mathematics programs that are out there, such as everyday math, such as investigations, these are all the National Science Foundation helped to support and develop, as well as the National Council of Teachers of Mathematics supported these programs. And these programs are based on current research, and they are grounded in fundamentals. However, we don't only think about fundamentals. People also have to be able to reason, and they have to be able to communicate and use problem solving. Those are real world skills every day, and as well as knowing your times tables to 12 or something.
Well, let's take another call, and thanks, Linda, for that one. Again, the number here in the exchange is 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. And to Dover, Scott is on the air. Hi, Scott. Go ahead. Welcome.
Thanks, Laura.
Sure.
So I want to say I agree with the earlier caller about the need to really clarify the goals we have for quantitative literacy or mathematics education for students. It's not necessarily true that everybody needs to go through calculus, but having good understanding of data and statistics and things like that is probably more important. But I also want to challenge something that's and I'm glad I didn't catch his name, but the local president of the chapter of the NCTM, about this notion of these research-based curricula like everyday math and connected math and investigations, because there is this misconception out there that people need to learn facts and be completely automatic in their times tables or whatever it is before they move on to interesting problems. And that just, whether you make it fun with games, that's great, but the reality is that's not true. We have a plethora of books that have come out from the National Research Council and other organizations that have really shown that, you don't have to do all the facts before you move to interesting problems. And programs like Everyday Math and Connected Math were created to actually try to get people to problem solve. Because most of us, when we do math, at least the kind of work that I do when you're doing math as an adult, nobody gives you the problem and, shows the line where the equal sign is. You have to actually set up the problem.
You figure out what the problem is. Yeah.
Exactly. So I just have one last point that, I do think that this bit about elementary school is critical. Think about being an elementary school teacher and being asked to be expert in 5, 6, 7 subject areas.
Right.
None of us could do it. And most of them are only required to take perhaps 2 math ed courses, math education courses, and math courses before they're certified to teach elementary school. Our kids, and I have a 4th grader, could certainly handle seeing 2 or 3 teachers a day. And if I was responsible for math and science and you were responsible for language arts and social studies, we would have a chance to actually become more expert. And that's where these curricula have fallen short, like everyday math. It just requires such deep knowledge of mathematics to deliver them effectively.
Interesting.
That it's hard for our teachers to get it.
So Scott, more like
to shake up the elementary
school. Yeah, more like the middle school and high school model, where you do have different teachers for a different subject instead of being with the same teacher all the time.
Handle it.
Yeah, interesting. Interesting point. Thanks a lot. Gosh, I'm not sure who should take that one. How about you, Lincoln? You've got 2 children in elementary school.
Well, I was actually just taking notes while Linda was talking and while Scott was talking, and I think Scott had some really good points. What I wrote to myself was the focus on fundamentals forgets the fact that we never use the fundamentals. When we use math, we have a problem in front of us that we are trying to solve. So, yeah, it's nice to have those facts at your fingertip, but what is really important is that you have learned methods of solving problems. And the more interesting the problem is, the easier it is to hook your students on it. So I think he had some great points there. In terms of what's going on, when I was in grad school, which was quite some time ago, the NCTM standards had just come out.
And NCTM,
there was a lot of,
sorry, Lincoln, what is NCTM again?
National Council of Teachers of Mathematics.
Got it. Okay.
And that was the first iteration, as far as my understanding is, of what's now become the core curriculum. And it was very exciting because one of the things we thought was going to happen was at elementary schools, there would be, just like there's a reading specialist and a music specialist, there would be a math specialist. And there were several of us in the program I was in who thought, wow, that would be the greatest job ever. So there would be, you know, here we are with our bachelor's and master's in mathematics going in and working with kids who are learning just at the beginning, and we can help them get the depth that maybe they can't get from their classroom teacher. And that sort of went by the wayside, I think, because nobody wanted to spend that kind of money for a teacher. You know, very few elementary schools had the money to do that. But I think that kind of depth in your educator will help the students a lot.
Okay, Paul, it's getting back to the money again.
Well, I don't think it really went by the wayside. What has been done is that we are supporting professional development in the development of elementary math specialists through Math Science Partnership resources. And we're looking to have cadres of math instructors at the elementary and middle school level really start to develop themselves as specialists. And then it will really take a process through policy at the state and local level for schools to start to adopt the usage of elementary and math specialists. And we are already seeing that through response to intervention, where we know that certain students really need a deeper focus in math than they're currently receiving.
Let's take another call. And in Center Sandwich, Carla is on the line. Hi, Carla. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. Good morning, Laura. This is a great topic, and many important points have already been made. So as I'm listening, I'm shifting my thinking. I just want to ask a question, and this is coming both as an employer and a parent, thinking about some of the comments that have been made with regards to problem solving. And I love the other caller's comment that in life, we don't usually have it all lined out with an equal sign, you know, and just fill in the blank. What are the implications? I'd love to hear your folks' thoughts on this, of technology. So the ready access for, you know, computational aid with adding machine, you know, calculators. I'm sorry, I'm dating myself, adding machines. And other,
it's all right, Carla.
I know, computer-based tools, because what I see, especially from an employment perspective, is that the gap isn't so much around the ability to do computation as it is around kind of structuring, setting up, identifying even the problem, and then doing the analytics. And that's really what, from an employment perspective, many of us value more highly than the ability to do the basic arithmetic and mathematical work.
Wow.
And I'll take my reply off the air. Thank you so much.
Oh, Carla, thank you, because this is a million-dollar question that we really should address. And we've got a break coming up, so we won't address it right at the moment. But, Carla, keep listening. It's a great point, the use of technology. You know, nobody wants the kids to always grab the calculator when there's something tough in front of them. On the other hand, I have seen the use of technology also enhance my own children's math comprehension. So it's a two-edged sword there, Carla, and I'll let our experts talk about it after a short break. 1-800-892-6477 is our number here on The Exchange for you to join us. Email is exchange@nhpr.org, and we'll be right back.
This is NHPR, where support comes from UR members and from Comcast Business Class, provider of internet, voice, TV, and Ethernet solutions that keep pace with the growth of your business. More information at 800-501-6000. And from North Branch Construction, 54 years experience building custom homes to multi-million dollar eco-friendly commercial buildings on time, on budget, online at northbranch.net. Good morning, it's 9:40. This is NHPR.
I'm Virginia Prescott. Discovering new ideas often means asking the right question.
What was the question?
That's the best question you can pull out of that stack.
How can I help you?
Word of mouth. Unexpected radio for the inquiring mind. Monday through Thursday at noon and again at 9 on NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, we're looking at the fundamental question of how to improve math education, math understanding among Granite State students. Join our conversation at 1-800-892-6477.
email us, exchange@nhpr.org. Also, you can post a comment on our Facebook page or on the Exchange page at nhpr.org. And gentlemen, just before the break, we got a great call from Carla wondering about the impact of technology on math understanding. Lincoln, I gave my own thoughts that it's kind of a two-edged sword, but I'd actually like to hear from you and Greg on this one. Go ahead, Lincoln.
Well, you know, I wouldn't balance my checkbook without a calculator. I mean, I know how to add and subtract, but really, I don't want to make mistakes. In the classroom here, I teach statistics every semester, and statistics has become a very technologically dependent subject. And the beauty of the technology is it allows you to focus on what's going on conceptually and really understanding how things are working rather than get bogged down. Anyone who's doing who's done statistics can tell you that the amount of calculations that go into just the basic computations, they get insane. When I took calculus, when I took stats 20 years ago, one problem might take you 25 or 30 minutes just of adding, subtracting, and squaring. Now that whole thing gets taken care of by the technology, and so you're free to do 7 or 8 different problems and really understand how, when the numbers change, when the ideas change, the whole problem changes. So I think my students get a much better understanding of the subject when they're done with the class than we did 20 or 30 years ago when I took statistics.
And so it's
all
helpful.
Thanks to the technology. Oh, certainly.
Yeah.
Certainly.
Is there
a
downside, Lincoln, though? What do you think?
I don't think so. I watched my son do his math facts, which he brings home every night, and he has the iPad that the school supplied to him, and he brings up his times table. And what I've seen over the last 2 years is that at first he always consulted the timetable. Now it's 7 times 6 or 7 times 8. It's the ones that are hard to remember that he uses it for. But other than that, because he's used the times table so often, he doesn't use it. I mean, he only uses it for the ones for 3 or 4 of his basic math facts, not for all of them. And eventually he'll stop using it altogether at his own speed. So having the technology has helped him memorize his facts, which everybody wants him to do. But there's no stigma because it's okay to use it. So you don't look at him, you know, the other kids aren't looking and saying, oh, he still needs his times table. It's just we use it for some things, we don't use it for others.
Well, and gentlemen, I want to bring another voice into our conversation. This is Sherry Fulton. She's an assistant principal at Sunset Heights Elementary School in Nashua and a curriculum specialist for the district. And Sherry, thanks for being with us. We appreciate your time.
Thank you for having me.
So why does Nashua feel it's important to change the way it approaches math? What's not working for you now?
Well, you know, I think when we look at mathematics, there's always been a fear of, doing our best in math. And so we've looked at this and we've said we need to understand how students are learning math and how we can improve their learning. So we have adopted a program this year with three schools. Our 3rd, 4th, and 5th graders are going through something called OGAP, which is an ongoing assessment project.
And so it's a pilot project that you're doing in Nashua.
It is, and we hope to continue it throughout all of the schools in the upcoming years.
What's unique about it, Sherry? What's different about it that attracted you to it?
Well, for me, it's been really eye-opening because it's almost simple, and we are working through some age-old things that we've worried about with children. With this program, we start with a pre-assessment and gather what the children already know, and then we'll look at that and analyze it and plan for instruction for each child. For instance, if we had a problem such as, an octopus has 8 legs, there were 12 octopus in the aquarium, how many legs are in all? We'd ask the child to solve that. They might solve it in many different ways, and they can all be right, but our job is to move them up the ladder to a higher thinking level. So one child might solve it by simply adding 8 plus 8 plus 8 12 times, which is fine, but that's the beginning strategies. We want to move them into drawing arrays and then later on into an area model. And finally, really understanding that they can double or use the commutative property to solve it. So this is just something we can do to help our children really understand and move forward.
You know, Sherry, this keeps coming up, and what you said piqued my interest. You said we're trying to follow each child, how he or she is approaching these problems. The issue of class size, though, and resources keeps coming up, Sherry. I mean, does your average elementary school teacher, especially, who usually has to teach all subjects to the kids, does he or she have the time, the ability to do that?
Well, and it is certainly a challenge, and we have some amazing teachers in Nashua, as I know other communities do as well, and overcrowding can be an issue. But one of the things that OGAP brings to the table is a daily math review of these problems, and each child is allowed to solve them, come up to the board, they solve it in front of the group, and then the teacher can model, here's another way you can find your answer. She carefully monitors each child as they are solving these issues and guides them along. So, it, you know, it is a difficult job, but we are rising to the challenge here in Nashua.
Well, Sherry, good to talk to you. Thank you.
Thank you.
That's Sherry Fulton, assistant principal at Sunset Heights Elementary School in Nashua and a curriculum specialist for the district, talking about a pilot program for math education going on in Nashua. The number for you to join us is 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. And gentlemen, I've got a couple emails that I would love to share with you. Here's one from Steve, who says, I believe that the math problem is part of a larger cultural issue for kids entering middle school or high school. Math is hard, and kids don't want to put in the time to study outside of the classroom. How can, Steve asks, New Hampshire educators shift the no-care attitude in most high school students that most high school students seem to have toward grades and education? Steve, it is a great question. Greg, you mentioned sort of cultural changes, attitudinal changes that kids have as they go through school. So why don't you tackle Steve's email?
Sure. There's been some great comments and ideas here that have come up. And one that connects to what Steve's email said is, you know, I didn't mean earlier to overemphasize the facts. Scott, the caller, brought up to start with problems that engage students and hook them. That's just it. There has to be a balance between the fundamentals, which we do need to know, and starting with the problems and problem situations, because that's what happens in the real world. You're given a problem situation. And isn't that what employers want, too? They want students or employees, when they come to them, who do know their basic facts, who can reason, communicate, and problem solve. Those things come from the problems that hook them. You know, additionally, we talked about technology. They have to be able to make sense of technology, and they have to know when it's the right tool. They also have to know when their head is the right tool, when mental math and making estimates is right. Because when they get that answer on a calculator or a computer or on their iPad, they have to think, is that the right answer? Does that answer seem to make sense? See, these are the things, the standards-based curricula, such as everyday math and connections. The connected math was mentioned earlier, and some of those newer high school curricula, too, that are like this, that these really focus on those things. And there's so much in the pot. It's not just facts anymore. We need people who can think, who can communicate, and who can reason.
Well, and here's an email that kind of relates to what Sherry said. This is from Marge in Concord. She says, middle and high school teachers need to be supported to use small group instruction. The teacher sits at a group, and the group rotates through him or her. Teachers use small groups in elementary, but we move on to teaching the whole class in middle and high school. So that's another interesting approach. What do you think, Paul?
Absolutely. I think as you look at the research, when we can group students together where they're at a common level, they're able to move faster by working together and working with the teachers addressing their specific need and their specific level.
It's interesting because this hour we've talked a little bit about, maybe the upper levels should adopt some of the lower level techniques. But earlier we talked about, from one of our callers, maybe the lower levels should adopt some of the upper level techniques. So something to learn from each end. Paul, do you want to jump in there real quick?
Yeah, I just want to make sure that before the end of the hour, we also mention the fact that one of the big conversations is right now, New Hampshire as a policy has a requirement of 3 years of math up through Algebra 1 for minimum expectations. And Greg can perhaps speak to this, but his organization has recommended that New Hampshire consider 4 years of math where students demonstrate proficiency and substantial depth of knowledge through Algebra 2, including geometry, data analysis, and some trigonometry. And we're going to be taking that up, and the state board will be taking that up over this year.
Okay, and let's take another call. This is Rick waiting in Meredith. Hi, Rick. You're on The Exchange. Welcome.
Thank you. I'm curious, when we have these conversations, we often speak of how the United States ranks against other countries. And I'm curious if we have the data on what programs these other countries that are beating us are using. Are they spending more resources? Are they using smaller class sizes? I'm just curious.
Yeah, it's a great question. And if I could, Rick, follow up with your question with another email that's similar from Noel, who says, I'm a teacher of English for speakers of other languages, not a math teacher, but I have known some international students who have amazing skills in math. Noel says, and it relates to what you say, Rick, why are we not looking more to other nations and how they teach math in their schools? We need to open our minds to other methods, learn from the most successful schools, no matter where they are located. Noel goes on to say, my students who are best at math tell me that in their country's math class is fun. Prizes are given out. Teams are formed. Students teach one another. What do you think about this, Lincoln, learning from outside, not just New Hampshire, but the United States?
Well, I mean, we'd be crazy not to. I mean, if we have something that we don't think is working, you know, find something that is working and see what they're doing different. To me, that's a common sense approach.
What do you think they do, Lincoln? Is it more resources? Is it smaller classes? Is it a longer school day? Is it a different method? What do you think?
Not having spent a lot of time outside of the country, I can't say. If it involves getting the students excited about math, which it sounds like from that email, it sounds like that's what they're talking about.
Right.
That's what it takes. I mean, the whole idea of picking a problem that a student is really invested in, that gives them the interest in learning sort of the less exciting parts so they can solve the part they're really interested in. To me, that's how I would try and make a math class exciting. But I'm not sure. I taught in Egypt for a year, and the system there was very structured, and I don't know as I would want to go to their system.
Interesting.
I can speak to that. But in terms of what's going on, and I know a lot of the countries in Southeast Asia have phenomenal scores. But I would also question those scores. Are they teaching everyone? Because we teach everyone, regardless of socioeconomic status, IQ, you name it, we're going to make you go to school. And when we compare ourselves to other countries, I think we can only really compare to other countries that are doing the same thing. And my understanding is that's not the case everywhere else.
Yeah, you know, that cautionary note when you're looking at this comparative data is very well taken. Absolutely. Paul?
I think the research of what other countries is doing is actually starting to show that that's no longer the case. It used to be, but now we're seeing universal education across these countries. So when you look at Finland, when you look at China, when you look at Hong Kong, when you look at Singapore, what you see is higher rigorous expectations, K through 12. You see deeper involvement in more complex problem solving and having students engaged in that problem solving. And you see more parental involvement in helping their students engage in their learning. The culture is different there. Parents absolutely expect to be a part of their students' education.
You know, here's an email that I just got from Bernadette in Laconia. Bernadette, thanks a lot. This raises some great points. She says, I disagree with many of your experts in math teaching. As an older individual, I have experienced many forms of revised teaching of math to young people. Catholic schools, she says, have been teaching math the old-fashioned way for many, many years. They graduate their students fully prepared to go on to higher education, equipped with the skills needed to either live their life without getting into financial difficulty or attending schools of higher education because they are so well prepared. Bernadette says, numbers don't change. Taught in a manner of simple and easy to understand language will prevail. Two out of our three sons were taught with the new math many years ago. This program was proven to be a complete failure. Bernadette closes by saying, Catholic schools have large classes. This does not affect how children learn. We were talking about that earlier. Wow, Greg, she raises some terrific points. Thanks a lot, Bernadette. What do you think, Greg?
Well, I don't know, honestly, a whole lot about the Catholic school system. I do know there's strong family there, and it comes back to one of the things we've said all along here, that the family is so important, and I'm sure there was a ton. She helped her children a ton at home. Unfortunately, it doesn't work for everyone. We talked a few moments ago about, you know, what the other countries, and Lincoln and Paul made some great points there. You know, basically, what are the other countries doing? You know, they're doing it in more of a standards-based way. They're teaching math, especially at the high school. We talked about how we fall off at the high school. They're teaching it in an integrated method. They don't separate the things out into algebra, geometry, and algebra 2. We talked about earlier how the K-5, actually our scores were doing pretty good at that level. Well, that's interesting because we're using those standards-based methods and ideas that the rest of the world is using. And so another one of the reasons why we're not doing so well at the high school is we're not taking those lessons from what everyone else is doing. I mean, that's one of the things we've done here at Lisbon is we now teach in an integrated mathematics program where all students take the same courses, Math 1, Math 2, and Math 3, and we integrate not only algebra and geometry, but data and statistics and discrete mathematics and the like.
Well, Bernadette, thanks a lot for raising those points. And I'll close out, I think, with you, Paul Leather. We haven't talked about it that much, but the Common Core standards are coming. This is a national set of educational standards for all subject areas, not just math. It's not from the federal government. It's from the National Governors Association and state education leaders. Most states, including New Hampshire, are getting ready for this, to adopt this. What's this going to mean in terms of math education, Paul?
Well, I think it's going to challenge math educators because I think the Common Core math state standards they're fewer, they're clearer, and they're higher and more rigorous. And so it's going to challenge folks to reach to them and to look at their curriculum and instruction to address them. It's going to provide a greater focus, and it's going to provide a focus across all of the states and all of our schools. So I look forward to this time. I know we're reaching the end, Laura. I want to thank you for including this conversation. It is a deep conversation, and more time could be taken with it.
Well, and certainly when the Common Core starts becoming more of a reality, we'll have some things to talk to around that. Paul, thanks a lot for being here. Appreciate it.
Yeah.
Paul Leather, New Hampshire's Deputy Commissioner of Education. Lincoln Robertson, it was great to talk to you. Thank you for your time.
Oh, thank you very much for having me.
Lincoln Robertson, mathematics professor at White Mountains Community College. And Greg Superci, good to talk to you, too. Thank you.
Thank you, Laura. It's great being here.
Greg Superci, president of the New Hampshire Teachers of Mathematics. He also teaches high school math in Lisbon. The Exchange is a production of New Hampshire Public Radio. The engineer is Dan Colgan. Our producer is Ellen Grimm. Our volunteer is Priscilla Malcolm. Our theme music was composed by Bob Lord. The Exchange's executive producer is Keith Shields. And I'm Laura Kanoy.